The Flesh and the Fiends.
This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
A graveyard is shrouded in darkness. This is the story of lost men and lost souls. It is a story of vice and murder. We make no apologies to the dead. It is all true. A wagon pulls to a stop. Two men alight, then walk among the gravestones. They climb a hill. One carrying a lantern pauses before a gravestone marked born 1749, died 1827. After dropping a grapnel and chain to the ground, they begin digging. The Flesh and the Fiends, with narrative description by AudioVision. Starring Peter Cushing, Donald Pleasance, June Laverick, co-starring Dermot Walsh, Renee Houston, George Rose, with Billy Whitelaw, John Kearney, Melvin Hayes, and June Powell, Andrew Faulds, Philip Lever, George Woodbridge, Gerard Green, Jeffrey Terrell. Original story by John Gilling. Screenplay by John Gilling and Leon Griffiths. Photographed in Dynascope by Monty Berman. Music written and conducted by Stanley Black. Art director, John Elphick. Production manager, Jack Swinburne. Editor, Jack Slade. Makeup, Jimmy Evans. Hairdresser, Betty Sheriff. Made at Shepperton Studios, Middlesex, England. Produced by Robert S. Baker and Monty Berman. Directed by John Gilling. As one of the men finishes spading aside the dirt, the other lowers the grapnel into the open grave of Tobias McIntosh. Using the grapnel, they drag aside the coffin lid. With the chain, they haul up a rotting corpse wrapped in a shroud and set it on the ground. A carriage passes beneath an arch and enters the courtyard. The Academy of Dr. Knox, Edinburgh, 1828. The carriage stops at the academy entrance. A coachman opens the carriage door and helps a young woman out.
Take the luggage around the back, please, Robbie.
Aye, miss, I will.
She approaches the entrance. Inside, a young man looks up.
All right, Davy, I'll sit with you.
Setting aside a book, he walks to the door. He opens it to the attractive young woman.
Good evening.
She smiles at him.
Dr. Mitchell. I hope you're better at diagnosing an illness than you are at recognizing a face.
Martha. Oh, forgive me. You weren't expected until next week.
I exercised a woman's privilege. I changed my mind.
Woman, indeed. And yet, 3 years ago...
Was I really so awful 3 years ago?
Well, you were very young. I know one thing, Martha. You're very beautiful now.
Thank you. How is the doctor?
Oh, he doesn't change. Brilliant, aggressive, provocative, verbose as ever. But even he will be at a loss for words when he sees his favorite niece.
Inside a lecture theater, Dr. Knox walks to a podium facing rows of students. Brushing by a skeleton, he stands before a lectern.
Miracles, gentlemen, are an apology for ignorance and a retreat for fools. You, men of medicine, are the modern miracle makers. To primitive man, the human body was a miracle. To us, it is a structure of some 260 bones and attendant Glands, muscles, blood vessels, nerves, organs, and tissues. A complicated structure, I grant you. But to us, no longer a miracle. And so today, some of you become doctors in your own right. Masters of anatomy. I congratulate you. You are entering the most honorable profession in the world. Sometimes too honorable. If half my colleagues pursued the study of disease as strenuously as the honor of knighthood, the country would be a damn sight healthier place to live in. But let me warn you, your studies do not end here. As long as you face the challenge of death, they never will end. Remember also that death is not only your enemy, it is your friend. Death is an incident producing clay. Use it, mold it, learn from it. And finally, hearken to the words of Mr. Alexander Pope. Know first thyself, presume not God to scan. The proper study of mankind is man. Yes, gentlemen, man, alive or dead.
The students stand in respect. As Dr. Knox turns to leave, a student hurries after him.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, excuse me.
May I speak to you, sir?
Certainly.
He follows Knox into a corridor.
Well?
I was hoping to have graduated this term, sir.
Not more than I, Mr. Jackson.
You'll tell me when I fail, won't you, sir? I try. I work harder than most. I try to please you.
Please me, indeed. You consider yourself harshly treated?
No, sir.
Unjustly?
No, sir.
I will diagnose the cause of your failure, Jackson. You are far too emotional. Emotion is a drug that dulls the intellect. You must learn to approach the science of medicine with a more clinical mind. Confine yourself to the abstract. When you are capable of doing that, then you will graduate with honors.
Yes, sir.
Jackson?
Sir?
Are you short of money?
Oh, sometimes it does get a bit difficult, sir, but
I asked for a statement, not a soliloquy. You could assist Davy to treat the subjects. You know what to do?
Yes, sir.
That'll put an extra guinea a month in your pocket.
Thank you, sir. That's very generous of you, sir.
Jackson turns and hurries away. With a brief smile, Knox walks on. Inside a study, Mitchell listens at the door. He turns as Martha runs to hide before Knox enters.
Ah, Mitchell. Well, another 30 witch doctors let loose upon the unsuspecting populace.
Sneaking up behind Knox, Martha covers his eyes. He snatches them away.
Good heavens.
She hugs him.
Uncle.
Dear child. Mitchell, we must write and thank Madame Duclos for this miracle.
I thought you didn't believe in them.
Oh, I do now. From a gawky, long-legged schoolgirl to this.
She twirls for him.
You look quite wonderful, my dear.
They kiss.
A tribute to French cooking. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. And I'm grateful to you for sending me to France.
Mitchell, we must drink a toast to France. You're the man for a pretty speech.
Oh, I can hardly compete with you, sir.
Would you call my speeches pretty?
Mitchell opens the door to admit Jackson.
Wonderful.
Comfortable?
Excuse me, sir. There are two gentlemen here with the stiff.
Annoyed, Knox turns to Jackson.
I beg your pardon?
With the subject, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Jackson leaves.
Attend to this, will you? And don't wait for me. You'll tell him all about the broken heart you left behind you in Paris.
Having handed Mitchell a decanter, Knox follows after Jackson. Mitchell pours drinks.
Well, are you going to tell me? About the broken heart?
I trust your interest is purely academic.
No.
Oh, it's wonderful to be home.
I hope you're not going to find Edinburgh dull after Paris.
Should I?
Oh, it needn't be. It can be the most romantic city in the world.
Then it has secrets I'd never dreamed of.
It has.
And will you show me these secrets, Dr. Mitchell?
Some of them.
A cellar door opens. Jackson, carrying a lantern, leads Knox and the servant Davy downstairs. Two men, the grave robbers, stand beside a crate.
Nice and fresh, sir. Just a week in the grave.
A grave robber removes a cloth, exposing the head of Tobias McIntosh. Holding a kerchief to his nose, Knox bends to inspect it.
I'll give you 5 guineas.
Oh, but
five, I said.
Well, Doctor, seeing you're such a good customer.
Where will you gentlemen be celebrating tonight?
Well, I go to the Merry Duke, sir.
Take this on account.
He tosses the coin.
Jackson, when my housekeeper returns, you'll get her to change this. Go down to the tavern and give them the balance. David.
Thank you kindly, sir.
As Davy leads the grave robbers away, Jackson sets aside the lantern, clutching the money Knox handed him.
Nice and fresh.
You'd think the medical council could do something about it, sir.
In what way?
Jackson pushes the crate toward a table as Davy hurries back to help.
They could petition Parliament.
Oh, yes, Parliament. With 500 walking corpses there, you would think they could spare one. The member for Edinburgh would do nicely. Easy now, Jackson. We don't want it to fall apart in the brine.
No, sir.
Jackson and Davy roll the corpse into a brine tub. Outside the Merry Duke, sailors follow two pretty women approaching the pub. Entering, one of the women, Mary, is greeted joyfully by a boisterous crowd. Nearby, as the two grave robbers celebrate, they are watched by two sullen-faced men.
You see them two, Willie? They call themselves resurrectionists. I suppose they think it adds a classy tone to the profession, eh, Willie?
It's disgusting. The place is going downhill when they serve the likes of them. Still, there's money in it, Willie.
Do you mean to tell me you'd be after handling a broken-down old corpse that's been in the earth for weeks for the sake of money? I'm surprised on you.
Ah, but the old woman keeps going on about money, Willie. Do you know what she was saying to me?
Huh?
She was saying I should look for work.
No.
Aye, it's as true as I sit here.
Work? And you a landlord as well?
One of the men, Hare, points to the door as Jackson enters. After scanning the crowd, Jackson strides toward the grave robbers. Noticing him, Mary follows. Shoving aside their women, the robbers eagerly accept payment from Jackson.
Good evening.
Oh, don't be minding us now. Get on with your cackling.
As Mary watches with interest, Hare and his companion, Burke, sidle up.
3, 4.
Thank you kindly.
Their greed aroused, Hare and Burke hurry from the pub. Turning to leave, Jackson pauses in front of Mary before moving on. She follows, but is stopped by a sailor.
Get your hands off me.
They weren't dirty till the quality came
in. They've no changes the day you were born in a stinking mitten.
As she struggles from his grasp, he tears off her skirt. She runs to Jackson.
Don't let him near me, mister.
The sailor holds up the skirt like a bullfighter's cape. Jackson glares at him.
Give the lady back her skirt.
Come and get it.
Watch it, mister.
Slowly, he walks toward the prancing matador. He leaps, but the sailor dodges away and Jackson tumbles to the floor. Rising to his feet, he charges, but is flung back to the floor by onlookers. As the sailor starts kicking him, Mary pushes through the crowd. She picks up a bottle and smashes it over the sailor's head. She kneels beside Jackson and helps him stand.
Thank you. Much obliged.
He hands her the skirt.
If you stay a while, I'll buy you a drink.
No, I'd better.
Pushing through the crowd, he hurries away. Outside, as Jackson strides on, he's mugged by Hare and Burke. Leaving the pub, Mary notices.
Help! Police! Murder! Help! Police! Murder!
As the muggers flee, she runs to Jackson.
Come with me. Quick!
Helping him to his feet, Mary walks him across the street toward a brothel. After propping him up, she opens the door and pushes him inside.
This way.
A door opens off the hall.
Hey, Mary! Where are you going?
Mind your own business.
Ignoring her friend, she pushes him upstairs.
Come on and join the party.
They enter her room.
Here, get underneath the light. Let's have a look at you.
She checks the cut on his face.
It's not so bad. I'll soon fix that. Sit yourself down.
As he sits on a bed, Mary pours water in a basin.
Thanks for your trouble.
Oh, it's the least I could do. You help me. Bring that chair over, will you?
He sets a chair beside the bed to hold the basin.
Look, there's no need to make all this fuss.
No fuss.
She looks at him slyly. Soaking a cloth, she bathes the cut on his face tenderly.
Have you been here before?
No, I haven't.
You're one of the medical students, aren't you?
How did you know?
Oh, we get a lot of your type in here. Them and art students. They come to study the human form. That's anatomy, isn't it?
Yes, but not quite as it's studied at the...
Mary runs her hand up his arm suggestively.
I could teach them more than they'll learn at college.
She strokes his face.
Don't you think I could?
I think I'd better go.
Did those villains get your purse?
Standing, he checks his pocket.
No, still here.
Good.
I'd better go.
Don't you like me?
As she blocks his way, he stares at her.
Yes, I do.
Stay a wee while.
No, I...
He steps away, then stops and turns back. She leans against the wall, thrusting out her bosom. He grabs her and kisses her. Next morning, stalls are set out in the market square below. In Mary's room, Jackson knots his tie in a mirror. Her undergarments hang from the bedpost. Smiling, he looks to the bed, then steps toward it. He sits on the bed beside the sleeping Mary. She rouses slowly, lifting her face to him. He kisses her, and she nestles against him with a contented smile.
How's your head?
Oh, that? It's all right. When will I see you again?
Oh, I'm here. All the time.
I mean, really see you. Take you out or something.
Oh. Take me out? A good one. And what did your friends say if they saw you out with the likes of me?
Don't laugh, Mary.
He leans over her.
When?
She looks at him in disbelief.
Tomorrow, maybe.
Tomorrow.
As he kisses her, she gently pushes him away.
You'd better go. You're going to be late for your class.
Good Lord, yes.
Standing, he grabs his coat.
Oh, knocks on it. All right. Tomorrow.
Uncertain but excited, Mary watches Jackson leave.
Tomorrow.
She leans back against the bed and smiles. Outside, Jackson strides through the busy square, whistling happily. He passes a group of children dancing in a circle around a half-wit boy. The boy falls to the ground.
Cut, Jamie.
A vendor tosses him an apple. Jamie throws it in the air and catches it repeatedly.
What a lovely rosy apple, Jamie.
Passing here snatches it.
Save us your corn, Mr. Hare.
Did you hear that, Willie? Save us your corn. Oh, it's a great whip the boy has. Get her the
You know, Jamie, there's one thing you got to learn. It's a hard life for an Egypt.
Burke and Hare walk away, leaving Jamie empty-handed. A young girl runs to them.
Mr. Burke!
What is it, Jenny?
It's coming to eat you home. Something terrible's happened.
Well, what is it?
You see when you get home.
She dashes away.
Could it be that woman's broke her neck?
Stop your whisper thinking, man.
Oh, it's the grand clown yar, Willie.
A lid is placed over a man in a coffin.
Poor old John. Just a handful of bones.
Aye, that he was.
As an undertaker begins nailing the lid shut, the woman walks to a window and looks out.
Can you hurry up and get him out now?
I'll do what I can for you.
She notices Burke and Hare approaching.
Aye. It makes the place look untidy.
Leaving the room, she runs outside and confronts Burke.
Guess the news, Willie.
Surprise me.
Old John's been and died on us.
No.
He must have passed away in the night without a word of warning.
Did you hear that, Willie? The lodger's died owing me money. £3 it is.
Now, what kind of a man is it would do a thing like that?
Trust old John to take the easy way out.
They follow Burke's wife Helen inside. As they enter, the undertaker finishes his work.
How's business?
Very slack. I'm away for some help, Mrs. Burke. He'll be gone sooner than a dog can wag his tail.
That'll be tomorrow. I don't know what the rest of my lodgers are going to say.
Well, he's one less to worry about, the dirty old swindler.
Oh, stop your moaning and go and put the bed to let sign out.
As Burke leaves, Hare sits on the coffin.
What's for dinner?
Kippers.
I can make do with the ones we had yesterday. They're still repeating on me.
If you'd earn a copper or two, you could have fin and haddock. Oh, there's one there in the cupboard, but I think it's gone off.
So's poor Johnny. You know, Burke, I was thinking. It's a shame for Johnny to be going to a pauper's grave. And him with an unpaid debt on his dying conscience.
Aye.
Hare slips a knife under the coffin lid and jimmies it.
Sure, they put them things on very loose.
What are you up to?
Burke, could your missus go down to the pub and get a can of gin?
And what do you think I'm going to use for money?
Stop your clacking, woman. Have you no respect for the dead? Here.
You're not so generous when it comes to paying your share of the house.
There's your man here, says be off with you.
Yeah.
As Helen leaves, Hare and Burke resume prying.
We could get 6 guineas for him up at the doctor's place and that'd wipe out the debt.
Aye, and besides giving him his rightful chance of salvation.
It's a great pleasure to be doing someone a kind service. If only he knew how happy he would be.
Ain't he got a mean old face? No wonder he died owing me money.
Entering a formal reception, Martha and Knox approach Mitchell.
Good evening. Good evening, Doctor.
Out of this nettle rash danger, pluck this flower.
Thank you, sir.
Mitchell takes her hand.
Thank you for the flowers.
I'm glad you like them.
Why is he giving this party, Geoffrey?
To launch you on Edinburgh society.
The real reason?
To collect his friends and enemies alike into one room and then insult them all indiscriminately.
He leads her away.
I tell you, gentlemen, medicine is being driven underground. The law yields to us the body of a criminal when he is caught and hanged. When?
Accepting a drink from a servant's tray, Knox addresses a group of noblemen.
Meanwhile, the resurrectionist plies a very useful trade.
Oh, really, Knox?
You deny it?
Well, I agree you doctors need bodies for dissection. But to condone a violation of graves by these ghouls...
I neither condone nor condemn. I accept. Is the feeding of worms more sacred than the pursuit of truth?
I think the Reverend feels that to violate the grave is to violate the soul.
I do.
Oh, really? I am told that when the body is clay, the soul has already flown, one way or the other.
Fortunately for the poor victims of these grave snatchers, that is true. The soul has left the body.
Oh, of course. I was wondering why I'd never come across one in my work.
No, Robert. Do you deny that the soul exists?
I deny nothing. I can show you the heart, my dear Reverend. Can you show me the soul?
It is there.
Where? Beneath the armpit, between the eyes... Deep in the abdomen.
The fact that you cannot see it does not prove its non-existence.
After all, you can't see a thought.
No, but you try having one without a brain.
Gentlemen, gentlemen. The trouble with Knox is he's a teacher. Oh, I'm old-fashioned. You can have too much of anatomy. For me, a surgeon needs 2 things. A patient disposition and a pair of strong hands.
Admirable qualifications for a laborer building the Caledonian Canal. I suggest you're wasting your talents, Dr. Ferguson.
I consider that an insult, sir.
I complimented your strength.
Gentlemen.
Elliot, is it true what I hear? They say no matter what the complaint, you have but one prescription. Cenopods.
That's a libel.
I know. A lawyer told me the story.
A servant whispers to Knox.
You must sue him sometime. Excuse me.
Knox leaves the room.
That man is doing the devil's work.
Aye. He does it brilliantly.
Couples in rows dance a stately minuet. Among them are Martha and Mitchell, who smile at each other. In Knox's cellar...
It's terrible creepy here, isn't it, Willie?
Shh, shh, shh. I need the talking.
me.
Jackson leads Knox and Davy downstairs. Burke and Hare stand before a half-naked corpse on a table.
Sure, he's the perfect specimen, Your Honor. Burke, stand aside so the gentleman can see our gentleman. Died only a few hours ago, Your Honor. We heard you like them fresh, sir. This one's as fresh as a new-cut cabbage.
Knox examines the body as Hare observes, dabbing his nose with a hanky.
Excellent. I'll give you 7 guineas.
Thank you kindly, Your Honor.
Is this your normal line of business?
Well, it's Mr. Burke here. He's by way of running a small lodging establishment, do you see, and...
I see.
Having intercepted the payment, Hare pockets the coins.
Put him in the brine, Davy.
May the saints preserve, Your Honor.
Davy and Jackson take the body into the brine.
And may his soul rest in peace.
Amen.
Burke tips his hat.
This way.
Come on, Willie.
Jackson leads them from the cellar. Trees sway gently in the sunshine by a stream bordering a walking path as a punt is paddled to shore. In it, Mitchell stands and picks up a picnic basket. Carefully, he edges past Martha and steps onto the bank. With Mary on his arm, Jackson strolls along the path and pauses, seeing Mitchell help Martha ashore.
How do you do, Miss Knox?
I'm well, thank you, Mr. Jackson.
How do you do?
Are you not going to introduce me to your friends?
Yes. This is Mary Patterson. Mary, this is Miss Knox, and...
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
This is Dr. Mitchell, one of our doctors.
Oh, you're one of them, are you? How'd you do? I'm very pleased to meet you.
It's a lovely day.
Oh, yes, yes, it is.
Most unexpected for the time of the year.
Oh, yeah, it's very much better than yesterday, don't you think?
Mitchell smiles uneasily.
Is that your boat?
It's a punt, Mary.
It looks nice. I wish we had one, Chris.
Well, why don't you borrow it for the afternoon? You'll be very welcome.
Oh, what with Chris paddling, no fear. I don't fancy walking here with wet drawers.
Mitchell gasps in alarm.
I think we'd better go, Mary. Goodbye, Miss Knox.
Goodbye, Mr. Jackson.
Dr. Mitchell. Come on, Mary.
Taking Mary's hand, Jackson strides away.
Well.
She's very pretty, isn't she?
Yes, she's very pretty.
I feel sorry for Jackson.
Oh? Why?
Oh, he tries so hard and he always fails.
Well, it's not from lack of encouragement. The doctor's been very patient with him. He's been giving him extra coaching.
He sets out the picnic gear and they sit.
But I'm afraid his mind's not on his work.
He looks at her tenderly.
Come to that, neither is mine.
He kisses her. After a pause, she returns it. In Jackson's room...
What's the matter, Mary?
Were you ashamed to introduce me to your friends?
Oh, they're not exactly friends, and I wasn't ashamed.
Well, you looked it!
Look, Mary...
He holds her.
I'm proud of you. You know that? I'm the proudest man in the world.
She melts in his embrace.
Oh, you need a woman about the place.
I need you. Oh, yes, Mary.
They fall onto the bed in a tangle of clothes and bedding.
I can't. I've got to work tonight.
What? Tonight?
I've got papers to prepare for tomorrow's lecture.
I thought perhaps we could go out for a wee drink somewhere. And then come back here.
No.
They kiss passionately. That night in a pub, Hare sits at a table, idly tugging at his hair. With a pleased smile, he picks up the drink left by a scruffy old woman lying before him, passed out. Setting down the empty mug, he stands and walks to Burke, snoozing at a table. He rummages in Burke's pocket, takes his money, then nudges him.
Come on, Burke. Burke, wake up, Burke. Set up straight, man. The money's gone.
It's all gone.
There ain't not a farthing left.
Well, what were you doing wasting half of it on the likes of her?
That's your Aggie is what they call a capital investment.
She's a what?
That's a thing the businessmen talk about.
Poor old Aggie.
Isn't she a sight to make her heart bleed?
That's the drink has took hold of her.
Come on, Aggie. Wake up, girl.
You can't go sleeping here tonight. Give me a hand, Burke.
What have you in mind, Willie?
Well, the poor thing needs a decent bed. It's the least we can do for her. Come on, Aggie. Home with Mr. Burke here.
Hoisting the drunken Aggie between them, they drag her to the door.
You know, Burke, there's no one here to see old Aggie go except us.
They peer about the empty pub. Gleefully, they holler outside. In the darkened street...
12 o'clock! All's well!
The night watchman having passed, Hare and Burke emerge from an alcove, dragging Aggie between them.
All's well!
They turn into an alley, but pause as a blind beggar stumbles toward them. As they hurry away, the beggar stops and listens, then moves on. Approaching his house, Bert kicks open the door. They carry the barely conscious Aggie inside. Helen watches from her bed as they set Aggie in a chair.
Drink.
What's she doing here?
Mind your business.
Aggie comes too.
Where am I?
Oh, Aggie, you're among friends.
Oh.
Me and Burke here. Aggie, me dear, you're in no condition to be walking abroad now. Burke, give Aggie a drink of the whiskey.
Burke places a mug in her hand.
That's me, girl. I can see the bloom coming back to your cheeks already. Helen, go outside and keep watch.
What for?
Do as Willie says, woman.
Aggie drains the mug as Burke glares at his wife.
Let us know if you see anyone coming.
Unsettled, Helen turns away. Burke pushes her from the room.
Willie, it won't take a second. Now, Burke, you wouldn't want to be turning old Aggie out. Her feelings are weary.
Here pats Aggie's head.
What do you have to say? What?
Now, Aggie, you're not thinking our intentions are dishonorable. You old enough to be my own mother. Rest her soul.
Hare pours more whiskey into her mug.
There's a couple of kind-hearted boys. There's no many as kind to the old folk these days.
Burke looks disparagingly at Hare.
Oh, I'm awful sleepy.
As Aggie nods off, Hare looks to Burke and grins nastily.
That's right, Aggie. You have a rest. A good rest. Do you hear that, Burke? She wants a rest.
Hare muffles Burke, startling him. When Hare removes his hand, Burke twitches nervously, then reaches down and smothers Aggie with his hands. Waking, she tosses her drink onto Hare, who leaps back. Kicking out, Aggie struggles to her feet. Burke holds her in his grasp as Hare dances about with glee, his hands covering his mouth. Burke forces Aggie back onto the bed, still grasping her tightly. Hare continues his grisly dance of joy, Burke watching him. As the woman grasps for her last breath, Hare stops his dance and stares. He smiles as she expires.
Hardly whisper. Sure, the old girl's better off. She'd know where to go. That must be a terrible thing when you're old.
She bit my hand, Willie. She bit it.
Well, you can't blame her for that. Here. Put her in here.
Hare drags over a large wooden box.
Fold her up nicely, Burke.
As he kicks the box on its side, a rat runs out. Hare cringes against the wall as Burke looks up. With a grin, Burke dashes forward and stomps on the rat.
Filthy thing. A filthy, rotten thing.
Dangling the rat by its tail.
Ain't she a beauty, eh, Willie?
Burke waves it in front of Hare's face. Hare cringes with fear, amusing Burke.
6.
Later in the cellar, Knox drops coins into Hare's outstretched hand.
You say you found her dead drunk in the street.
But fresh as a herring, Your Honor.
And already pickled, as you might say.
I prefer the subjects to be pickled externally. This one is liable to explode. However, her heart, I suppose.
You're a great man to be doing business with, Doctor. Do you take the snuff?
Knox turns away from Hare's snuff box.
Would you be wanting a more or less regular supply of poor unfortunates like Aggie?
Nearby, Jackson listens.
Subjects here.
Isn't there hundreds just like her in this old town? Nowhere to sleep and with the freezing cold. It's a wonder the whole place isn't littered with corpses.
Good night, Doctor.
Aye, good night to you, Doctor.
Hare pulls Burke away and they leave.
Probably the best thing for her, eh, Davy?
Aye. She was a fair age, sir. She'll serve a more useful purpose now than she did in life.
See to her in the morning, will you?
Aye, sir.
Outside.
Ah, do you know what? A man could become a millionaire at this game.
Do you think so, Willie?
Aren't I telling you? And you know, it gives a man pride, respect of himself to be doing a good job. Just think of it, Willie. Burke and Hare, members of the great medical profession.
I draw your attention to the protuberance of the frontal lobe.
At the Academy, Knox stands before a skeleton.
But he was hanged some 20 years ago for murdering his entire family.
Jackson dozes in his seat.
Mr. Jackson? Mr. Jackson?
A colleague nudges him and he stands.
Yes, sir.
Will you be kind enough to step onto the platform?
Yes, sir.
Now, sir, will you please explain to us how modern surgery might have saved this man from the gallows?
Yes, sir.
He points his finger apprehensively.
First,
use the pointer, Mr. Jackson.
He takes the pointer from Knox.
We are waiting.
Yes, sir. First,
please don't mumble, sir, and turn your head so the class can hear you.
First, by removing the protuberance on the frontal lobe.
Removing it? What are you proposing to do, scalp him? Bart!
I'm sorry, sir.
You cannot enlighten us?
No, sir.
Were you not given a thesis to prepare on this subject, Mr. Jackson?
Yes, sir, but you see...
That will be all. Mr. Smedley?
Chastened, Jackson returns to his seat, and Smedley takes his place.
Proceed, Mr. Smedley. Modern surgery could have lifted part of the lobe...
Back in his seat, Jackson folds his arms, glancing up remorsefully.
Taken off the brain. Very good. Continue, please.
That evening, a breeze ruffles the pages of a textbook lying by a lit oil lamp on a table. Across the room, Jackson lies on his unmade bed, fully clothed. He's awakened by a female voice singing and sits up.
Young men and maidens, I'll listen unto me. Well, unto you do I unfold what proved my destiny.
Mary enters drunkenly, shutting the door behind her, and Jackson glares at her.
What you looking at me like that for?
I was just looking.
She flings the tablecloth aside and the lantern smashes to the floor, erupting in flames. Jackson rushes to put out the fire, slamming the flames repeatedly with a pillow.
Chris!
Drops to his knee, extinguishing the last of the flames. As the fire is finally quenched, he stands. Alarmed, Mary runs to him, weeping, and hugs him.
Mary, it's all right.
She looks up at him tearfully.
Oh, you must hate me.
He shakes his head. He gives her a handkerchief to wipe her eyes.
Where did you go?
Oh, I went across the road for a wee drink. You know how it is.
Yeah, I know how it is.
As he steps aside, she looks at him wistfully.
Chris?
Yeah?
You know you asked me to think about...
About marrying me. Well...
No, Chris.
Couldn't I make you happy, Mary?
You see the way I am. Half of me wants to be with you and the other half keeps tugging the other way. I'm not a good girl for you, Chris. I never was. I need to go out and laugh and have fun and maybe have a drink too much, you know? I don't want to make you miserable.
Look, Mary, I know it's dull for you sitting about here, but I've got exams to pass. I'm going to be a doctor.
I can know that.
But I will try and take you out more. Honestly, I will.
Will you, Chris?
You promised me one thing, Mary.
What?
Stay away from that house.
I'll try. Really, I will. I'll try, Chris.
Promise, Mary.
I promise.
Good. And tomorrow night I'll take
her. Picking her up, he twirls her about, collapsing onto the bed.
Oh, Chris. Oh, let's not talk about fire, Chris.
They embrace. Meanwhile, at Burke's, Hare prances in front of Burke and Helen, showing off his new vest.
It's the real aristocrat here, Willie. That's the finest waistcoat I ever seen in my life. That suits the colour of your eyes.
Bloodshot.
Ah, keep a civil tongue in your head, woman.
Is there nothing for me?
An old man knocks at the open door.
What do you want?
Oh, I saw the bed to let notice. And if the bed's still vacant...
Oh, don't stand there in the draught. Come in.
As Helen leads the old gent into the room, Hare nudges Burke and smiles cunningly at them.
Don't worry. You're with friends.
It's more than welcome you are, and that's for truth, Abel.
Aye, that's the truth. As welcome as a golden guinea.
They sit the man down.
Would you like a bite of something to sup? Helen, my darling, don't just stand there. Go and get the gentleman a plate of something.
Oh, you're very kind. I'm a poor man, but I won't be any bother.
Oh, sure, you'll be no bother at all. Have you been long in Edinburgh?
Oh, no, I just arrived the day. I'm down from Inverann. That's a warp in the Highlands, you can.
Is it now? Did you hear that, Burke? A gentleman's come all the way down from the Highlands.
Aye.
Will you be wanting the bed for long?
Ah, well, that's hard to see. I'm looking for work, you see.
I see. Tell me, do you take the snuff?
Okay, thank you.
He takes a pinch of snuff from Hare's box.
McLaren. Angus McLaren.
Ah, we'll just call you Angus. Tell me, Angus, have you got any friends in this town?
Ach, no, I'm just a crofter. And there are hard times by. So I just thought to myself, it'd be nice to visit the capital and make a decent sum of money.
Angus so accepts a drink from Burke.
Peace. Isn't that what we all want? Just to end our days in peace.
Sometime later, Burke struggles into Knox's cellar, toting a large heavy crate on his back. Hare slips around past him. He stops and stares wide-eyed at Dr. Mitchell standing at the door.
You've done business with us before, I gather.
Oh, I saw that.
Burke drops the crate.
With Dr. Knox.
The doctor is occupied at the moment.
Mitchell comes downstairs.
I'll attend to you myself. I'm Dr. Mitchell. Well, open the box.
Hey, sir.
Eyeing Mitchell suspiciously, Hare turns and walks to the crate, extracting a small pry bar from the back of his waistband. He pries open the lid. When Mitchell peers into the crate, Angus' lifeless eyes stare back and blood seeps from his nose.
This man died only a few hours ago.
Oh, aye, that's right, Doctor. You see, we got in quick before the parish undertaker could get his thieving hands on him.
Where'd you get him?
Well, you see, the poor old soul was lodging at my colleague's house. That's Mr. Burke here. And he seemed to take ill, just old age, passing away in the night.
How did he get that bruise?
Bruise? Has he got a bruise?
Well, look for yourself, man.
Hare looks in Angus's forehead.
Would you believe that? Do you see that, Burke? He's got a bruise on the side of his head. Isn't that amazing? I'm glad you pointed that out, Doctor.
I said, where did he get it?
I don't think there's any need to cross-examine our friends, Dr. Mitchell.
Knox and Davy come downstairs.
We've had several fine specimens from these gentlemen in the past.
I was merely trying to establish the cause of death, sir.
Don't tell me he was a patient of yours, Mitchell.
Knox bends over the crate to examine the corpse.
Yes, I think 8 guineas is the current market price, is it not?
8 guineas it is, sir.
And as ever, sir, it's a pleasure to be doing business with a fine gentleman like yourself.
Aye, that it is, Doctor.
Rudely, Burke pushes past Mitchell.
Show our friends out and then lock up, will you, David?
Knox turns to leave.
Good night, dear Doctor. Good night.
Burke smirks at Mitchell and follows Hare outside.
Dr. Knox.
Mitchell approaches Knox, concerned.
Dr. Mitchell.
Are you satisfied that subject died a natural death?
Why do you ask?
Those two men, what do you know about them, sir?
I know nothing and care less.
And you'll continue to accept subjects from them without question?
Angered by Mitchell's presumption, Knox glares at him.
I will continue to teach anatomy, using the best specimens available to turn out doctors who will replace quacks. Is there anything else?
No, sir.
Then good night, Mitchell.
He strides away as Mitchell sinks back, deflated. Several men stand before the Academy's entrance. Davy approaches and opens the door.
Is Dr. Knox engaged?
No wish to be disturbed. The doctor is busy now.
We'd like to see him on an urgent matter. Will you kindly tell him?
Come in, gentlemen.
When Knox addresses his visitors, they pause. Then stride toward him. He opens the door to his study, and they file in.
This is a great honor.
He shuts the study door.
Four of Edinburgh's leading surgeons.
Dear me.
I hope you still consider it an honor when you've heard the purpose of our visit.
Nothing could change my opinion of you, gentlemen. Proceed.
An article by Dr. Knox.
Page 13, but pray don't trouble to find the place, Dr. Elliot. I have an excellent memory.
A few months ago, a man came to the Edinburgh Infirmary with an aneurysm connected with one of the larger arteries of the neck. Notwithstanding its obvious characteristics, even to the merest beginner, that it was an aneurysm, a certain distinguished surgeon pronounced it to be an abscess.
Accordingly, this celebrity, who was once an amateur member of the ring, and who prides himself, among other things, upon the strength of his hands and arms, without pretension to head, plunged his knife into what he believed to be an abscess, and the patient died in a few seconds.
Oh, the damned effrontery! How dare you?
Dare? Is that a challenge?
Why didn't you name the surgeon? Are you frightened of a lawsuit?
Since we all know your name and your reputation.
You heard that, gentlemen.
You surprise me, Dr. Ferguson. I would prefer to remain anonymous.
I intend to sue you to the last penny in your possession.
A most laudable enterprise. No doubt your preoccupation over a rich harvest will inspire a more adequate excuse for your next failure.
Are you?
Ferguson is restrained by his colleagues.
Why didn't you let him strike me? Or were you thinking he would have provided a more potent weapon in the law courts than a mere wrangle over an undisputed fact?
Pacing, Knox circles his accusers, glaring at them contemptuously.
I see before me four white, angry, baffled faces. Why? Because I have written an article? Because I have accused one of you of murder? My friends, go ahead. Take me to the high courts. And in the words of your puppet, sue me for every penny I possess. A business-like venture. I wish you better success in the field of commerce than you have enjoyed in the sacred task of our profession.
Is that all you have to say?
No.
Mitchell enters.
I am aware that the path of truth was never strewn with roses. On every hand, one encounters a gray gauntlet of empty threats. To be condemned by ignorance is a compliment to knowledge. Croak your miserable way to the law courts, if you dare. I will meet you on the steps with a torchlight to scorch into your souls and leave them bare as a warning to your future victims. And now, if you will be so good as to incline your heads slightly to the right, you will observe the door. Please use it.
Frustrated, Ferguson turns and leaves. His surgeon colleagues follow as Knox observes them over his shoulder. Mitchell looks to Knox searchingly.
Why do you deliberately insult them?
Knox turns to face him.
Are you criticizing me?
No, not criticizing. I wouldn't be so presumptuous. But I'm warning you. Those doctors will harm you if they can.
How can they harm me?
By making capital out of the merest whisper of gossip.
Such as?
An association with men like Burke and Hare.
And who will listen to them? Am I to be as scared of expressing the truth as they are at hearing it? I tell you, Mitchell,
It will take more than a handful of quacks to shake me. I am producing surgeons who will fight for humanity, not destroy it. And in the process of doing that, nothing will stand in my way. The individual is not important.
Knox storms out. The daft boy Jamie enters a pub, smiling. Seated by the door, Burke trips him. As Jamie sprawls onto the floor, Burke laughs heartily. Picking himself up, Jamie approaches Mary, who sings and drinks with her friend Maggie.
Hey, what's the time?
What's it matter?
Oh, I said I'd be home to meet Chris.
Chris.
Thank goodness. Oh, hello, Jamie.
Hello, Maggie. I got a new rhyme for you.
Why?
You stop your fidgeting me now.
Come on, what's your rhyme? What's your rhyme, Jamie?
It goes like this. There are creepers and crawlers and six-legged bogies and things that go bump in the neck.
Oh, that's very good, Jamie. Isn't that good?
Aye, it's good.
I'll give you a penny, huh? If you can remember the rest of it.
Oh, come on. Let's go over to the house, Mary. Come on, there'll be free drinks over there.
Maggie hauls Mary away.
Another time.
Yeah. Following the women, Jamie is tripped by hair. The door opens to Jackson's darkened room and he steps in.
Mary?
He turns up a lantern to be greeted by an empty, rumpled bed. He turns and leaves. In the brothel, Mary lies across a man's lap, carousing, as another girl dances on a table. Jackson charges through the hallway, followed by the madam, and flings open a door. He stares angrily at the debauchery before him. As the revelers pause, Mary looks at him.
Get your coat, Mary.
She stands and glares.
Get out of here. If you want a scene, I'll give it to you.
You're drunk, Mary. Let me take you home.
Let me take you home. Oh, did you hear that? Let me take you home, is it? If you were half a man, you'd drag me out of here by the roots of my hair. But you just try it and I'll kill you. Go home yourself, Chris Jackson, and scratch away with your pen so the doctor will be pleased with you in the morning. And don't keep a light burning for me, because I'll no be back. I'm not going to be bored anymore by your mealy-mouthed talk.
He turns abruptly and leaves. A man grabs Mary and hauls her back. She bites his arm, pulls free, and runs after Jackson. At the door, she peers about anxiously.
Chris!
She runs into the street outside the Mary Duke, searching.
Chris!
She falls to her knees, weeping. Leaving the pub, Hare and Burke watch her from the raised sidewalk. Stepping down to the street, they approach her. Sensing their presence, she raises her head and looks up at them.
What is it now?
Wiping a tear away,
nothing.
She stands.
Give me a drink.
Of course, me darling.
Hare hands her a bottle. Stepping away, she gulps from it.
I'm a poor fool to be greeting for the likes of him.
She takes another deep swig.
Imagine me thinking I could make a man out of a ninny.
She upends the empty bottle.
There's plenty more of that where we're going.
Why? Where would that be?
Tanner's Close. Just the three of us.
Hare puts an arm around her.
As cozy as three bugs in a rug. It's just around the corner.
Just around the corner. Just around the corner.
Just she staggers away, followed closely by the two men.
Just around the corner. Just around the corner.
Leaving the brothel with a man, Maggie notices Mary, but is dragged away by her escort. Mary and the two killers continue through the darkened alley. Entering Burke's house, Hare leads her to the bedroom. He stops Burke from following.
Where's your wife? She's gone to see her twin sister.
You'll wait here.
Why, Willie? What for?
Because I'm telling you.
He elbows Hare playfully.
Don't make the place untidy, Willie.
With a leering grin, Hare shuts the door on Burke and slips into the bedroom where Mary waits. He removes his hat as she stares at him.
We're together, Mary.
Tossing aside his hat and walking stick, he steps forward.
Just the two of us.
No!
He grabs her, but she turns away.
I can give you money.
As she turns back in fear, he advances again. Consumed with lust, he snatches her, but she breaks away and runs to the door. Kicking the door closed, he wrestles her onto the bed. Outside, Burke listens and licks his lips lasciviously. In the bedroom, Hare grapples Mary as she struggles to get free. He holds his hands over her mouth and nose to silence her as she clutches at him. As they fall onto the bed, he tightens his grip, an intense look of evil on his face. Slowly, her hands fall from him as he pants from the struggle. Listening outside, Burke hears the front door and rushes in.
Hey, Willie, the old woman's coming.
Well, let's get our... Hey.
Helen comes into the bedroom.
What's she doing here?
She's dead.
Did you touch her?
Nobody touched her. Willie just killed her, that's all.
Oh, that's all right. We don't want a thing like that in the house. She get us a bad name.
Look, me and Willie has work to do, so go to bed, woman.
What, and her lying there? Get rid of that first. Just look at the mess she's made in my bed anyway.
She storms from the room. Burke kicks the door shut behind her and sits on the bed with Hare, looking down at Mary.
Sure looks lovely, Willie.
Aye.
You know, I'm thinking the good doctor should give us a bit more this time.
That death is not...
At the academy, Jackson copies notes in the empty lecture theater.
It is your friend. Death is an... incident producing clay.
Davy pushes in a cart which holds a body under a sheet.
Oh, you're at work early, Mr. Jackson.
Yes, Davy.
This one's the best we've had so far. The doctor wants some drawings taken before we put her in the brine.
As Davy leaves, Jackson returns to his studies.
Mold.
Pausing, he looks up at the cart. He tries to resume his work, but the cart distracts him. Tossing down his quill, he rubs his forehead, then stares at the cart. Suspicious, he stands and slowly walks toward it. He stands over the covered body, surveying it. Drawing back the sheet, he's stunned by the sight of Mary's lifeless face staring up at him. His face contorts in anguish. Weeping, he falls across the body, covering it back up. Mitchell enters the theater.
Jackson.
Jackson slowly raises his head.
Well, what is it, then?
He stands and runs.
Hey, what's the matter with you?
Charging past Mitchell, he dashes into the residence. In the hallway, he stops before Davy and gazes past him down a connecting corridor. Ignoring Davy, he strides on, clenching his teeth in anger. He passes Knox, throws open the front doors, and runs outside. Davy approaches Knox.
What is the matter with Jackson?
Aye, he was acting very strange.
I can tell you why.
Mitchell joins them.
Well?
Burke and Hare have just brought in the body of a woman named Mary Patterson. She was Jackson's girl.
Startled, Knox looks to the open doors. Turning back, unconcerned, he strides on. Outside, Jackson runs into an alley. He stops at Burke's front door and dashes in. Slamming open an inside door, he advances on Burke seated at a table, eating. Burke stares at the intruder. As Jackson pauses in a doorway, Hare enters behind him.
You killed Mary Patterson.
I never touched her. Be off with you.
You killed her.
Now get back to where you come from.
Jackson snatches Burke by the throat, wrestles him onto the table, and throttles him.
You killed my
man. Hare strolls up behind the struggling pair. He takes out a knife and, with a fiendish grin, plunges it into Jackson's back. Jackson slumps onto Burke. Hare shoves him off onto the floor.
Well, Burke, that's one subject we won't be selling to Dr. Knox.
Casually, he wipes the blood from his knife. That night, a man strolls in the alley. As he nears Burke's house, Hare steps outside, closing the door behind him.
Good night, Mr. Hare.
Good night to you, sir.
Hare turns back and opens the door.
Come on, me darling.
They bring Jackson out.
Hey, I'll be as sober as a judge in the morning.
With Jackson's body propped between them, they drag it along the alley. Surprised, they pause and stare. Jamie steps from the shadows. He strolls toward them.
What's the matter with you, Frank?
It's fine. We'll see you later, Jamie.
Oh, I may as well come along with you. Can I give you a hand? He doesn't look very well.
All right. He's had too much to drink, that's all.
I wish I could say the same for myself.
Well, here.
Hare gives him a coin and they move on.
Mr. Hare, you've given me a golden guinea.
Bewildered, he turns away. Next day in town.
Murder in Westport. Murder most foul.
Jamie is among the crowd in the market square following the crier. He pauses and looks at a ring he holds in his hand, then smiles. At the morgue, a policeman, Inspector McCullough, approaches a covered cart, followed by Knox and Mitchell. He pulls back the sheet to display Jackson's body for Knox to identify.
Christopher Jackson.
Are you quite sure, sir?
Quite.
You say he was stabbed?
Yes, sir. He was found in an alleyway early this morning.
Knox turns away as McCullough covers the body back up.
Do you know of any reason why somebody should want to kill him?
None. He was a quiet lad, hard-working. I don't know about his personal life.
Do you, Dr. Mitchell?
Mitchell glances nervously at Knox.
I can't think why anybody should want to kill him.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I don't think I need detain you any longer.
Thank you, Inspector.
They all leave. Later, in a carriage.
Why didn't you convey your suspicions to the police?
Did you want me to?
And why not?
You know what I fear, sir. An opportunity for your enemies to destroy you.
Your consideration for me is very touching, Mitchell. However, if you seriously think that Burke and Hare were responsible for Jackson's murder, your duty as a citizen is obvious. Or if you really consider that the life of a street woman is more important than the advance of surgery, then stand in the market square and scream murder to the mob.
I was thinking only of Jackson's.
Knox's carriage is driven through the crowded market square.
Hey, come here!
Burke and Hare watch it pass.
Hey, did you see that, Wally?
Aye, the good doctor coming away from the police station.
A lot of good that'll do the police.
Jamie runs to them.
Hey, what are you skulking there for, you daft loon?
Did you get the drunk home safely?
Hey. We got him home safely, Jamie.
I was just asking. You see, I've done a terrible sin.
Did you know?
I found a man in the alleyway. He was dead.
Harris stares at Jamie.
And what was the wicked thing you did then, Jamie?
I stole a ring off his finger. And then, you know, I went to confession. And the priest said I should take it to the police. Now, what do you think about that?
And did you take it to the police, Jamie?
Not yet.
You didn't, eh? Well, it's a wise boy you are, Jamie.
Wise?
Here, have you got it on you now, huh?
No.
Burke looms in behind Jamie.
Hey, and if you take my advice, you'll sell it. You see, the police might get to thinking that it was you that killed the man. Now, me and Mr. Burke here, we may be interested in buying it from you, seeing as we're in the trading business.
Would you really?
Wouldn't we, Willie?
Aye, we would.
So you run along and get it, Jamie.
Shall I bring it here?
No, bring it to the house tonight. Then we can have a wee drink just to celebrate the transaction. There's no time like the night for talking business.
Hair pushes Jamie away.
Well, what do you think, Willie?
I don't think he's half so daft as we thought he was.
They move along.
Jamie!
Hello, Maggie.
I've been searching everywhere for Mary. Have you not seen her?
No, Maggie. I've not seen Mary for nigh on 2 days now.
I'm worried about her.
Worried?
You were talking to her just now.
Oh, I was... Oh, it's a secret, Maggie.
As he walks away, Maggie is suspicious. That evening at the academy...
Jeffrey.
Martha enters and approaches Mitchell.
I have a confession to make.
Oh?
Today I overheard some of the students discussing the doctor. They were saying terrible things, Jeffrey. They were saying that the doctor is in particular, how or where he procures bodies for dissection. This isn't true, is it, Jeffrey?
Uncomfortable, he looks away.
Jeffrey, this isn't true.
No, Mother. No.
Knox comes in the door. He approaches them.
Good evening, Mitchell. Can we discuss tomorrow's lecture? I trust you'll receive my notes. Yes, sir. Our subject is the heart.
Knox strides on between them. Reaching across, Mitchell kisses Martha on the cheek.
Don't worry.
He follows Knox from the room. In the lit alley by Burke's house, Jamie strolls toward a pig pen.
Hello, Mr. Burke. Hello, Mr. Hare. Hello, hello.
After tossing bits of food to the pigs, he walks toward the house.
Hello, Mr. Burke. Are you there?
He enters through the darkened open doorway.
Hello, Mr. Burke. Are you there?
Looking about in the dark, he enters the kitchen.
Mr. Hare? It's me, Jamie.
Burke snatches him as Hare slams the kitchen door. Freeing himself, Jamie runs to the table and turns as Helen comes in from the bedroom. Burke grabs him again, but he slips away. Jamie runs into the bedroom. Burke chases him with Hare watching hungrily. Upset and uncertain, Helen follows the struggle. Jamie escapes and dashes back to the kitchen. Hare grins with excitement.
Helen, get outside. Watch for anyone coming.
Hare opens the door for Helen, then shuts it as Jamie runs to it. Outside, Maggie edges toward the open front door. She runs and hides as Helen comes out and peers about the empty alley. Back inside, Jamie pushes aside Hare, then Burke, and runs outside. Fleeing, he falls into the pig pen as Burke and Hare chase him. They lift him and fling him to the ground. As Maggie watches from her hiding place, Burke throttles the lad. Maggie bites her hand to avoid calling out and slips back in the shadows. The killers pick up Jamie's lifeless body. They haul him back in the house, followed by Helen. Entering the bedroom, they drop the corpse on the bed.
What's the matter, Helen? There's no more screaming.
Only the pigs.
Get the box ready, Burke.
As Burke stands and staggers away, Hare searches Jamie's pockets.
Well, don't let's be forgetting the ring.
Hare digs out the ring.
That's what he come here for.
Grinning maniacally, he slides the ring on his finger.
Maggie!
Outside, Maggie runs through the alley, shouting.
Maggie!
She dashes into the market square and runs to the approaching Mitchell.
They murdered Jamie!
Who murdered Jamie? Who?
He was back in here! I've seen them!
As Maggie runs on, she is followed by a crowd. Troubled, Mitchell dashes away.
But I tell you, it was murder, and I saw it happen with my own eyes.
At the police station, Inspector McCullough grabs her.
Jamie, those wicked cutthroats back in here were murdering!
Will you calm yourself, lady? I can't make an accusation of murder against somebody without some proof of the fact.
Will you come to the house? You might find the evidence you're wanting.
She drags the inspector outside.
What's happened to Jamie, Inspector?
It's not right. I don't like this at all.
No. Award your aims. No call to be greeting yet.
Pushing through the crowd, McCullough strides on with Maggie. At the Burks, a frightened Helen turns, hearing the knocking. She picks up a shawl and runs to the door to open it.
All right, Mrs. Burke, where are they?
Well, what do you mean?
What do you think
I mean?
She
charges in.
You can't come busting into decent people's homes like that.
Where's Dove, Jamie?
I don't know. I never saw him. I swear it, I never saw him, I tell you. And
you're lying!
Maggie confronts her.
Jamie,
no,
I didn't.
It happened.
No, it's not true.
I'm Danny Patterson, you dirty beast!
Maggie pummels Helen with her fists.
Stop it, will you? Stop it! You better look your arm.
Stop it, will you?
McCullough separates them.
They're dead! They're both dead! And if you want to find them, go to the academy or Dr. Knox.
Surprised at this, the inspector strides from the house. Picking up her shawl, Maggie follows him out. Knox and Davy enter the academy cellar.
Dr. Knox.
Mitchell enters.
In a few minutes, Burke and Hare will bring you another subject. I beg of you not to receive it.
And why not?
Because the police know it was murdered. A woman witnessed it.
Knox walks to a body lying beside the brine tub and removes its covering blanket.
Is this what you mean?
Mitchell looks at Jamie's corpse.
Yes.
Was this young man well known?
Everybody knew Daft Jamie.
And a woman screamed murder. Yet our friends Burke and Hare were not unduly perturbed when they brought him here.
Because they know you have more to lose than they. They're relying on you to cover their traces.
Are you accusing me of collusion with them?
Dr. Knox, I don't know what to believe any longer. But I beg of you, for your own sake, dispose of the body before...
You were saying?
It's too late.
Open the door, Davy.
Davy runs to the door.
My conscience is answerable only to me, Dr. Mitchell. Nothing is too late.
McCullough leads Maggie in.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but I've received some information from this woman.
I have already been informed, Inspector.
They approach the body.
That's it! That's Jeannie! Poor Jeannie!
It was delivered a few minutes ago by two men of the name of Burke and Hare.
Have you examined the body?
You interrupted my intention, Inspector.
Take a look now, Dr. Knox, if you please.
Donning his glasses, Knox examines the corpse.
Could you state the cause of death?
Violence, without any doubt.
A crowd wielding torches gathers outside the Mary Duke.
They've been murdering right under our noses.
And what's the law doing about it?
Let's get after them ourselves.
Led by the innkeeper and Maggie, the angry mob streams through the streets. Helen finds the killers in an alley.
Willie, they're after you. They're coming towards the house. They're coming after the pair of you. Listen.
What do we do, Willie?
The crowd swells in numbers as more and more torch-bearing townspeople join in.
It's all up with us. They're close by.
The warehouse. We can hide there.
What about me?
You stay here, woman.
No.
They'll turn and run at the sight of your ugly face.
No! Don't leave me!
Helen spits at her husband as he flees with hair. The angry, swollen mob marches through the city. It passes through the market square. As the horde approaches the alley to the Burks, Helen runs to her house. She pauses at the front door.
Better wait in the warehouse.
She points the way.
Wait till the warehouse. Come on. All ready.
As the crowd passes Helen, she receives the odd blow and collapses against the doorway, sobbing, blood trickling down the side of her mouth. The door to the warehouse swings open. Hare and Burke stumble inside, exhausted.
I coming, Willie?
Just shows you could never trust a woman.
Outside, the crowd crosses a bridge.
Come on!
Nearing the warehouse, they break into a run.
Come on, Willie.
Picking up a plank, Burke bars the door. They run to a staircase and cringe against a wall. Led by police, the crowd arrives at the barred door. A huge battering ram is carried forward. Arriving at the door, the ram is made ready. As it's flung against the door, Hare pants with fright inside. The door trembles and starts to shatter. The killers climb up the stairs, seeking refuge behind some crates. Hare grabs Burke as the door gives way. He flings Burke down to the ravenous mob. Overwhelmed, Burke is pummeled by the rioting horde. Hare runs to a door with club-wielding townsmen hot on his heels. He enters a room and shuts the door, then runs to a barred window.
There he is!
Spotting him at the window, the crowd below surges beneath it. Flinging open the door, policemen snatch the terrified Hare and drag him away. Outside, the assembled throng erupts with glee. Hats are waved in the air in triumph. Meanwhile, in the Academy's living room, Knox paces in front of Martha, wringing his hands. She sits nervously doing needlepoint. Coming through the front door, Mitchell sets his hat on a side table and enters the living room.
They've arrested Burke and Hare.
Knox's hands sink to his side, keeping his back to Mitchell. Martha looks up at Mitchell as he turns and leaves the room.
In the case of the Crown versus William Burke, call the first witness for the prosecution.
In court,
call William Hare.
Hare enters the witness box. Nervously, he twists the ring on his finger.
Silence in court.
Place your hand on the Bible. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Oh, that I do, Your Honor.
Standing in the dark, Burke stares at the turncoat. Later, outside the court...
There's Town King's evidence!
What is Town King's evidence?
In the market square, a herald reads a proclamation.
In the trial of the Crown versus William Burke, the verdict has been reached. Burke guilty!
Doctor!
Dr. Knox, no charge!
Dr. Knox, no charge!
Maggie is angered.
But why should that old scoundrel get away free as air? Not on the train!
In a pub, angry patrons voice opinions.
And as for hair,
they never did an honest day's work in their lives.
While at the medical council,
functionally put behind bars!
He's as guilty as either of them.
At the academy, a student is smashed to the floor.
Now, if anyone else has anything to say against Knox, he'd better tell me now.
Entering the lecture theater, Knox notes the student on the floor. His pupils resume their seats in the near-empty room as the student on the floor gets up. The doctor approaches the lectern and sets down his notes as the crowd rages outside.
Be seated, please.
As Knox steps off the dais, a stone is hurled through a window.
Keep your seats. The subject of this morning's lecture, gentlemen, is neurology.
In the square, a picture of the execution is painted for bystanders. Slowly, Burke mounts a scaffold, escorted by police.
I wonder what he's thinking now!
He turns to face a priest.
It's a curse on Dr. Knox, I'm thinking, Father. Do you know he never paid us for the last subject we brought him?
Now you must make an act of contrition, my son.
Ah, that's none of my business, Father. But if he paid us for the subject like an honest man, I'd be standing here in a decent pair of trousers, meeting the public as I am for the first time.
The hangman places a noose about his neck, to the glee of the bystanders. The rope is hauled taut. Burke is hoisted from the platform and his feet thrash about. They stop as his life passes. At the police station, disheveled and uncertain, Hare steps forward. Two policemen stand beside the inspector.
There are no charges against you, Mr. Hare. You're free to go.
Hare twists his ring nervously.
The mob. They'll be waiting for me.
You can go out the back way.
Will you send someone with me?
Aye. As far as the door.
He nods to a policeman, who steps forward to escort the frightened killer to the door. Wide-eyed and breathing erratically, Hare slowly advances with the policeman following. Pushed outside, Hare steps cautiously from the darkened doorway. A blind beggar stands nearby. Hare looks up and down the empty alley. He walks on, pausing by the beggar. Settling his coat about him, he continues apprehensively. He turns abruptly as a brutish man appears behind him. The brawny man stares at him menacingly. As Hare steps back, another looms behind him holding a flaming torch. He walks slowly forward. Hare edges backward from his threatening flame. Grabbed from behind, Hare's arms are pinned at his side. He cringes as the flame is thrust into his face. Standing nearby, the blind beggar smiles slightly. Hare's eyelids are seared shut as he's released, and he slumps against a wall. Bloody fluid runs down his face as he falls to the ground. The beggar feels his way along the wall as he walks on. An angry crowd is still gathered outside the academy. Inside...
I could get the coach round the back for you. It would only take a few minutes longer.
And keep the medical council waiting, Davy. That would be unforgivable.
Oh, I beg of you not to go out there.
Knox strokes Martha's cheek. T- Taking his walking stick and hat, he walks past Mitchell to the door.
Jeffrey!
Take care of her, Mitchell.
He steps outside. Coming out the front door, he's confronted by the angry mob. Carefully setting his hat on his head, he shoulders his way through their midst. Fists are waved in his face and a menacing club is brandished at him. He remains stoic. As the coach door is opened for him, he is jostled and shoved. He tips his hat to the unruly throng and enters the coach. The door is closed behind him and he's driven away. Back inside the academy, Mitchell stands with Martha.
He's indestructible.
No, he isn't indestructible, Jeffrey. With all the jackals snapping at his heels, he's bound to fall. In a few minutes, he faces the medical council, doctors who for years have tried to destroy him. And he hasn't got a friend who'll raise a finger to help him.
She strides away, leaving Mitchell deep in thought. At the council meeting...
This is not a court of law, Dr. Knox. The medical council is concerned only with the honor of our profession. Have you nothing to say?
Nothing. You are my judges, gentlemen. This is a heaven-sent opportunity. Make the most of it.
Knox turns and strides toward the door. He opens it and pauses as Mitchell faces him. He steps aside to allow Mitchell to enter, then walks out. Mitchell closes the door and approaches the surprised council members.
Mr. Chairman, gentlemen.
I don't think we require your presence, Dr. Mitchell.
I feel there is something you ought to hear, sir.
Very well.
Gentlemen, I haven't come here to defend Dr. Knox, and I'm not going to plead for him. We have all traded in death. Bodies snatched from the grave. Bodies taken from coffins before they went into the grave. In all the years of your experience, can you deny that doubt has ever entered your minds?
As to what, Dr. Mitchell?
As to the cause of death.
This is a scandalous implication.
It is more than that. It is an accusation. We are the students of Hippocrates, but some of us are hypocrites. Look into your hearts and seek the truth. And then if you condemn Dr. Knox, ask yourselves whether or not you condemn each other and the entire medical profession.
Dr. Mitchell, I demand that you retract that statement.
As dawn breaks, Knox walks through the near-deserted market square. A little girl runs to him, begging for money.
Give us a handy, mister. Give us a handy.
And what will you buy with it?
Oh, just a few sweeties, that's all.
I'm sorry. I haven't any money with me. If you want to come to my house, I'll give you some there.
No, thank you. You might send me to Dr. Knox.
With a painful look, he watches her run off. Her innocent remark has stunned him. He stares ahead, uncertainly, with trembling lips. Slowly, pensively, he walks away. Windblown scraps of paper scud about the unkempt street below his feet as he stalks on, absorbed in thought. Finally, arriving at the academy, he enters. At the sound of the door, Martha comes downstairs. Davy approaches him.
Doctor.
Davy.
Gathering her skirts, Martha runs to her uncle.
Oh, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you.
She hugs him.
I thought I'd never see you again.
He kisses her forehead.
And why?
Because of the mob. Death to Dr. Knox. They've been shouting it all night.
So you didn't expect me to return in one piece? Or perhaps as a subject for my dissecting table.
She grins in amusement.
I've only been walking, Martha.
All night?
All night. Excellent for the constitution.
And most edifying for the soul.
The soul?
Oh, yes. I admit its existence. We are not demigods, Martha. As a child, I believed in God and the devil. It took a child to show me what I am now. I failed, Martha.
Oh, no.
They enter his study.
Yes, I failed. Oh, I don't care what they say about me. I've listened to the screams of the mob and the howls of deprecation from the medical council. Bloodlust and hatred. I bracket my colleagues with the rest. I despise them all.
Everyone?
Until this morning, yes. But I've just heard the voice of conscience. From a small child, I heard the truth.
And what did the voice of conscience say?
It said, you are an ogre, Dr. Knox. You have killed humanity.
For the sake of humanity.
He shakes his head.
For the sake of achievement, ambition. Those bits of clay, the poor lumps of humanity that Burke and Hare brought in. I have to confess to you, Martha. They seemed so small in my scheme of things. But I knew how they died.
Surprised, she turns to him. Saddened, she stares. He turns slowly away from her and walks to the door. He pauses, picks up a textbook, and steps out of the study. He stops in the hallway. As he takes out his pocket watch, Mitchell enters.
They've reached their decision. You are exonerated.
Relieved, Knox takes a deep breath.
So, they've decided to let the world judge me. Very courageous of them.
Knox checks his pocket watch.
It is time for my lecture. I have never missed a lecture, Mitchell.
No, sir.
It'll be quite a new experience talking to empty walls. At least, they won't criticize me.
With a nod, he walks on. Martha steps from the study to face Mitchell.
Thank you, darling.
They kiss. Head bowed, Knox walks slowly along the hallway. Hearing voices, he pauses and rubs his chin. Raising his head with renewed hope, he strides on confidently. Entering the lecture theater, he is surprised by the large number of students. He steps to the lectern and sets down his textbook.
Be seated, gentlemen. Before commencing this morning's lecture, let us consider the oath of Hippocrates, the sacred oath of our profession. I will prescribe regimen for the good of my patients, according to my ability and my judgment, and never do harm to anyone.
The end. Dr. Knox, Peter Cushing, Martha Knox, June Laverick, William Hare, Donald Pleasance, William Burke, George Rose, Helen Burke, Renee Houston, Dr. Jeffrey Mitchell, Dermot Walsh, Mary Patterson, Billy Whitelaw, Chris Jackson, John Carney, Daft Jamie, Melvin Hayes, Maggie O'Hara, June Powell, Inspector McCullough, Andrew Folds. This described version of The Flesh and the Fiends was created by Audiovision. The narrative description was written by Vern Margetts, narrated by Melissa Unger, and produced by Jim DeMello, Ben Whaley, and Edgar Wong Baxter. To learn more about described video, visit www.audiovisioncanada.com.